Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man is on fire.
Which direction we are going?
Directly El Camino. Would have been DWI.
We have reached a tipping point.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. After an unscheduled week off, we are back. This is the tipping point. I am Stephen Platinum. Am I wrong? Perhaps. I am joined, as always, by the lovely and not quite venerable Miss Rachel and the almost lovely, venerable Larry Goodman. How are you guys doing tonight?
Sore, and I'll be good if I can get the smell of beer out of my hair in the next week.
Larry, how are you doing this week?
Well, I suspect I'm feeling a little better than either of you guys were on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. What Miss Rachel is alluding to is at Anarchy's hostile environment, which ended up being the last night in Anarchy Wrestling, something we definitely have to talk about here at the beginning. I was in the... The War Games match happened. Team PCW did not win. And so that meant I had to have 5 minutes in the cage with Jeff G. Bailey. I decided discretion was the better part of valor, and I would try to leave, which ended up being a match in and of itself. Larry, I know you mentioned it in your report, but if you weren't there, there's really no adequate way to describe the... I mean, is it hyperbole, Larry, to say that was a small-scale riot that happened as I tried to make my way to the front door?
That is not an exaggeration.
And I eventually got there after fighting fans of all ages, security guards, referees. They came out to grab me. Seven got a hold of me. Took me back to the cage, javelined me into the cage a couple of times, and then I fought Jeff G. Bailey. Miss Rachel tried to help me out, and unfortunately it left both of us laying at the end of it, covered in beer, surrounded by Anarchy wrestlers, and perhaps worst of all, having to listen to speeches from Jeff G. Bailey and Bill Behrens. Actually, it was an incredibly emotional night, to be honest. It was really fantastic. I was actually chatting with somebody today and mentioned, and this is going to sound crazy coming from me, I guess on a night that I think surprised everybody in terms of the sheer quality of the show. I don't think anybody, even the people involved, thought the show would go as spectacularly as it did. Still, I have to say that because of the strange turn of events that led to this being the last Anarchy show, with the last minute sale and all this kind of stuff, I felt a twang of remorse that they weren't allowed to sort of set up kind of a bigger deal for the last show. Not that it wasn't fantastic, not that War Games wasn't amazing, not that, you know, wrapping up PCW versus Anarchy wasn't the right way to do it, but it's a shame that, you know, the Reverend Dans weren't there, Tank and Iceberg, the rest of the rejects, you know, Sean Tempers, Ace. Larry, would you agree with that assessment?
I would, particularly being there for the last night of Wildside, where it was clear, and everyone knew that was the end, because Bill was going to WWE, and he had the opportunity to really set up a beautiful farewell. Yeah, I would agree. That's about the only negative thing I could say about the show, the only regret was not having an opportunity to have that last show with people coming back and so forth.
Miss Rachel, mm-hmm. Of course, you had an incredibly busy night and suffered at the hands of another choke slam by Michael Judas, a thunderous choke slam. What are your feelings? This is a big question. What are your feelings post-anarchy? I mean, I certainly am not going to be a part of whatever the new regime and league is. I'm assuming you're not as well, though I don't know that for sure. What are your thoughts of being a part of the end of anarchy? Certainly, I think your time spent in anarchy has been a great boon to your career. But what are your thoughts as anarchy has kind of wound itself up now?
You know, it's the timing of it is, I don't want to say good as far as where my career is going, just because that sounds really terrible, but I am getting out and starting to go new places. The timing lined up just right, but it is such a bittersweet thing because I've been there for a few years now and I've been very integral to a lot of the stuff that's been going on. And while the beer-spattered and blood-spattered goodbye was not necessarily the way that I wanted to go, it's definitely something when I look back, I don't think I could replace the time that I spent there and how much I learned and who I learned it from.
Yeah. Larry, you know, now is probably not the time to sort of pick apart what exactly happened, what led to Anarchy having its last show. Were you surprised at the last show? If so, I mean, I assume you were, at least to an extent. What surprised you about that last show? And did you know that that was going to be the last Anarchy show before it was officially announced by Jeff G at the end of the show?
Well, I'll start with the second part. No, I didn't. I mean, I knew that a sale very likely had been consummated, but I did not know that the name was going to be changed or that then there was going to be an announcement of a name change at the end of the show, and it was no longer going to be known as Anarchy. As far as surprises, as I said in my report, the surprise is a pleasant one, that a story that I was not like real thrilled with as it was being told with some of the telling, was beautifully told at the end. As was, I thought, the Ashworth Jacob, the Ashworth Blue story was really well told, and the Buck Jagged Edge story. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, the storytelling at the end was so strong. That's what surprised me.
That's fantastic. It'll be interesting to see. So they're going to take a month off. They're going to take the month of September off, and then their debut show of the new league will be October 10th, I believe. That's going to be interesting too. What I'm going to just throw this out there to the two of you. What's your predictions on how the new league is going to do, at least initially? Are they going to go back? Because Anarchy's crowds had slipped for the TV tapings, had slipped into the upper 50s range. Do you think people are going to turn out to see this new league to see what they have to offer, especially with an extra month to sort of promote? Or do you think the death of Anarchy is the death of the last great crowds they will have in that building?
It's all, I think, on how it's played. I think promotion will play a big part in it. And, you know, time and time again, we see things when they're new tend to get a lot of interest. And so a lot of people mm-hmm. come out. I think the real challenge will be, after they get started, the people who have been there know that Bill has been such an integral part of
yes.
the talent and the storytelling that's going to be for the new owner. That's going to be a big hurdle to get over, and that, I think, is what's going to actually determine what size crowd they have going forward, at least past the first or second show.
Yes. Larry, what are your thoughts on that?
If the new leadership gets out and promotes, they certainly should have 125 for the first show.
Mm.
Maybe even a little more than that. And then it's going to be what do the people see when they come? How many of the familiar faces are there? The ones they really like, the ones that they consider to be the top stars. How many of them are retained? Are there some new people coming in that, or old faces returning that have been in Anarchy in the past that people perceive as stars? Is there enough star power to sustain crowds' interest to come back and see what develops? With that said, I think from a business standpoint, they really have their work cut out for them in that building. It's not a favorable lease situation. The building itself is in bad shape with an owner that's not doing anything to the building, and they got to draw some people to make the numbers work there. From a business standpoint, I think they're challenged.
Here's a few pluses. I'm going to throw these out there, and if you agree or disagree, feel free to chime in. I think here's a plus. We're not talking about who the owner is. I think that's sort of the rut that Anarchy, that's part of the rut that Anarchy has gotten in. Whether it was, Franklin Dove or Charles Anschutz, I think having Charles as the owner, not only was it not necessarily the best fit stylistically and otherwise, I think having Charles as the very public face as the owner of Anarchy created expectations that weren't able to live up to, and sort of created a general sense of discord where maybe none really existed. Does that make sense? Where people were worried about, is this going to be a priority for Charles? Is he going to care? And, the new owner, I'm certainly, there's lots of people who know in the wrestling business, but it's not a matter of public record. And I think that that's a good move. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree with that. I think that even before Charles, there was always kind of speculation on the motivation behind the owner.
Yeah.
Based on certain things that were public. So I think keeping it kind of under wraps is really the way to go, because it lets them focus on talent and storytelling rather than the behind the scenes stuff and the speculations there.
Yeah, Larry, what are your thoughts on that?
No, couldn't agree more. It would serve no useful purpose to make the owner part of the story, so to speak, at this point in time.
I'm gonna throw one more question out. Sorry, I just, I think the end of Anarchy is a huge story. It might even be the biggest story in Georgia wrestling this year. I'm gonna brush off the old computer keyboard, pick it out of mothballs, and write a full disclosure this week about the sort of the end of Anarchy and my whole experience with them. One more question about Anarchy. if you could give advice to the new owners/bookers, who's somebody that you would advise them to get as far as talent or whomever to assist with that show, to be a part of that show that you think could make a difference, or any other advice? I mean, just, play armchair owner or armchair consultant to the owner right now. I'll give you a little while to think about it. So again, who do you think, what advice would you give them? My initial bit of advice is this. OSWA, I've said a number of terrible things about them in the past, aka the truth. But one thing I will give them credit for is they hustle as far as the promotion end. They glad hand, they're out in that community in force. They make themselves visibly known. They do little things at the fair, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I do think that Anarchy kind of rested on its laurels from its early days of Anarchy, where Jerry Palmer was very instrumental. I mean, he's like the de facto mayor of that town. So he was all over the place. They did any number of shows in Helen, Georgia, other places, of course, famously drew 900 to the Georgia Mountain Center. And, you know, Jerry Palmer really got out there and shook the bushes and did what he had to do to get people in that building, which coincided nicely with some hot angles, right? Elite versus Devil's Rejects, or Devil's Rejects against Anarchy. And that, I think, promotion is the number one advice I would give, that even the best stuff in the world, if it's not in front of a crowd, it's almost like it didn't happen. I mean, I cannot describe, Larry and Rachel, the relief I felt. I wouldn't even look out to see if there was a crowd. I wouldn't do it because I was terrified that we were going to be doing all of this in front of 50. And then when I looked out there and I saw that it was many times that number, it was a huge sense of relief. And I think it really lent to everybody's performance, from the matches to the promos to everything. I think everything just felt much more important. So my first advice is, whoever's going to run it, whoever's going to promote it, you need to get out there. And I'm not talking about hanging a bunch of posters around the usual areas. I mean, going out and meeting people and going out and getting the new promotion's name in the papers or whatever you've got to do to get people interested and thinking about that place again. That's my first bit of advice.
I think absolutely. And that, I think that is the biggest thing, but also just having been there as long as I was for almost 3 years, there were a lot of the same faces and a lot of the same feuds. And I think as much as going out and finding new talent is important, I think even more than that is just making sure that when they do that is really making sure that the quality stays there. Anarchy, even with a lot of the guys that made the big time, a lot of those were during the Wildside days, but it was certainly still something that they boasted about. And to be able to continue to do that, to say that that building produces stars, quality has to be the number one priority there. Booking can take it so far, but just with the things that have happened in that building, it's so much more of a challenge because there's so much more expectation there.
Mm.
And with just the legacy of the building. So finding new talent, but making sure that quality of that new talent is as much as who's been there in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Larry, any advice to the new owner and promoters of the people that are going to be in the Church of Southern Wrestling?
Several things. Of course, I'm beating a very dead horse here, but step up the production quality. Get that big screen working again. Use it for more things. I think they need new blood at the top, specifically a new top-level babyface. It should not be the regular. I mean, nothing wrong with the guys they've been using, but a new babyface that can make an impact should be part of the scenario. And then the third thing is, okay, so the owner's not going to be a focus, but who is going to be the focus as far as the public face of the company? And, you know, at the shows, is it going to be, you know, is there going to be a matchmaker? Who is it, you know, and I'm not saying like a heavy-duty authority figure role. I don't really go for that. But somebody's got to be the public face of the company in some form or fashion, or is just the ring announcer going to come out and just introduce matches? I mean, I'm just curious about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it cannot be overstated. The loss of Bill Barons is an absolute crippling blow. I think on multiple levels, and the number one place where I think it hurts them is the reason that you would do, and this is only theory and conjecture on my part because certainly my reasons were different, but the reason you would do Wildside or you would do anarchy for what amounted to very little money for most of the guys. But you, the return that you got for doing that show was more than worth it, right? There was a level of TV exposure. I don't know if they're going to continue a TV show. I don't know at all. I would imagine that they would not, because Bill was really instrumental in all of that stuff. So that's already something to factor in. And you were there because you could learn. Bill was a consummate teacher. This is the other thing I think that they need to think about replacing. Not that you can replace a Bill Behrens, but if Bill Behrens is not there, if Brody Chase has not been around in a long time, if a lot of the veteran guys are no longer there, or they're plying their trade at Empire, who is now going to run every Saturday again, which means you're not going to get guys bouncing back and forth between those two shows anymore. I don't know. If Jeff G. Bailey sticks around, that would be one thing. But again, that's another guy potentially that you're losing, who guys learn from example, and who's that kind of guy that will pull you aside and tell you what he thinks of your match and what you need to do to improve, and who's a kind of a proven teacher and a winner. I don't know who that will be. I would imagine Slim J still runs the school, and Slim J's kind of participation in the whole thing would seem vital as well. But if Bill isn't there, and Slim, he's going to be at Ring of Honor next Saturday, and no telling how that's going to go. So I don't know. I see that they have a huge, if this was a sports team, the analogy I would use is they need veteran leadership on that team. And I don't know where that comes from. Where's that going to come from? Any thoughts on that?
Those are just such huge shoes to fill, and of the people that have been there lately, I don't know that I can name anybody who would fill those shoes, and that's kind of disappointing to say out loud.
Yeah, I think you raised a great question for which I have no answer at all.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I know he was scheduled for last week. Unfortunately, we had the venerable technical difficulties on a grand scale. We just weren't able to put on the show. So we're moving the guest to this week. But Larry, is Paul Adams going to be on, or is he unable to make it?
We are hoping for Paul Adams. Paul is not the right word. He's responsible for booking a lot of the acts for the fair, for the Tennessee State Fair that's coming up in September. Mm-hmm. And he got a meeting that got moved. So hopefully he'll join us. We will see within the next 30 minutes whether he does or not. But we are now joined by Tennessee wrestling star. He's been in a lot of different places. Off the top of my head, traditional championship wrestling, NWA Smoky Mountain, had a run here in Georgia with Rampage. Very glad to have with us. And recently went to China. We're joined now by Matt Sigman.
How's it going, guys?
Hi, Matt. How are you?
This is wonderful.
This is Stephen Platinum. I don't know if we've ever formally met. I wanted to get a question in right away, because I'm so interested in the recent trip that you took to China. I went to China not in a wrestling capacity at all. I was straight out of high school and took a trip to China, South Korea, and Japan with a couple of friends. And China back then, I have to say, at that time, it was kind of disappointing in that it was so dirty and it seemed like nothing was going on unless you were in a very tourist-specific area. I imagine it's incredibly different now. What were your overall impressions of China, and were you surprised at all at what you saw?
We went in with the mindset that we had no clue what we were getting into. And, you see a lot on the news and social media, a lot of negative things here and there just about, overall the country and how it is and stuff. But, man, we were treated great. We had a blast. Everybody was nice. you know, each place you visit, each place we went to and traveled around to, it was up and down in terms of, you know, how nice it was and things like that. But I tell you, it was like stepping into a totally different world, totally different environment, and very cool experience. And I hope we get to go back again here in November.
How many shows did you do in China?
We did two actual shows. We were there for 12 days, but most of it was media. This was kind of like a test run of sorts to do shows for promoters and media, just to kind of build up for the next tour and set up things for next year too. We did a lot of things that were kind of like shows, but they called them clinics. Just for media to come to record and things like that. We actually, one of the main things we did was we built up to one big show. We ended up drawing about 5,000 people. So that was really cool. We packed out a brand new arena in Dongguan, China. And I think we were actually the first like real big entertainment event there. Mainland China is trying to get, so it seems to me that they're trying to get a lot of new entertainment acts. They're opening up a little bit, trying to get some more revenue coming in with entertainment avenues, and wrestling seems to be one of them. So that was, you know, it was a cool experience. The big show we did, only like six matches or whatever, but the people were very receptive. I don't know if they've actually got to watch wrestling before. I don't think WWE has a huge foot, you know, in the country yet. But they treated us very well, and the reception was very good for the shows in general.
Matt, this is Stephen Platinum again. I recently read this article, and it was hysterical. It was about a guy who is a comedian, he's a comedian in America, but he's Chinese, and he went back to China to try to get stand-up to be a thing in China, which apparently it's completely not their cultural sensibilities at all. So it was sort of a long article describing his pitfalls and triumphs in getting stand-up comedy to be a thing in China. And, you know, what kind of humor worked? What kind of humor didn't work? Did they understand, you know, sort of stand-up conventions about sarcasm and messing with the audience, or would they not like that? What was your impression on what was your audience's take? I mean, 5,000, that's a lot of people, many of whom, if not all of them, had never seen pro wrestling before, or certainly never seen it live. What was their take on things? Was there anything that they seemed to go for that American audiences no longer go for? Or were there things that fell completely flat just because they didn't get the nuance of what was going on?
You know, I don't think anything fell completely flat. I don't think that they quite knew what they were getting into. We didn't know what we were getting into. Going out there, it was hard at first to get heat. They were kind of intimidated, I think scared to really, they cheer everything. But I think a lot of the people were scared to, you know, boo and get fired up a little bit. About halfway through my match, I kept, you know, antagonizing, rubbing it in and working the crowd pretty good. And they started picking on it. So overall throughout the night, everybody worked pretty hard. They tried to keep psychology first and foremost. And that seemed to be a good choice and build throughout the night. So by the end of the night, they had Barbarian on top with Ricky Nelson, the promoter. And by their match, the crowd was, you know, kind of used to the whole deal, and they were pretty fired up and ready to go. They didn't understand, I don't think, the concept of actual, like, rules and pinfalls and things. You'd hit big moves, or you'd do something that gets a good reaction, good clap, good, you know, kind of reaction from them. But as far as when it came for, like, a false finish of sorts, they had no idea what was going on. So reactions were a little different, and that's another reason that we were hoping to use this as just a test run to work the kinks out. See, they ended up actually broadcasting us on one of the local government channels across the whole country live, no delay, which was real big deal because the government was involved.
Wow.
A lot of the things we did. And they showed up. We didn't know. And they showed up the day before, and they said, we're bringing TV crew tomorrow. It's going to be live on, it's like CCTV or something like that. And it airs all across China, and they're like, no delay, live. So the first thing that's running through my head is, oh, God, the girls cannot have any wardrobe. We'll get killed. And, that kind of thing, but it ended up working out really, really smooth, and I guess they enjoyed it a whole lot. So I think they couple the channels there may show a little bit of UFC. I don't know what all WWE has, but I know that most of what they're so restrictive on their entertainment, television, and things like that, that they most of the time, if it's a sporting event, they'll do like a delay just to make sure, or they'll you know monitor everything that's going on. So when they told us it was just going to be straight live, you know, that was kind of a whoa kind of big deal. But
yeah,
really cool, really cool. And I think they're working right now on the contracts and the little fine tuning of everything for us to go back November the 4th through the 16th is the current plan. So and I think on that loop we're going to do 8 shows. With the TV crew going to be there every night. As far as from what I've been told, things change in wrestling every day. You know, you guys know that. But
sure.
Ricky Nelson, the promoter who organized all this, man, he's worked his tail off to make this a good thing and make it a go. And there's other companies trying to get over there too, and I think it could be a great place for a lot of people to make good money if it picked up. So, China's a big place, you know, crazy population. So there's a lot of money to be made in terms of wrestling. I don't know how the rest of their economy is doing this week. I've seen a lot of things. But, you know, as far as entertainment goes, lots of good things could come of this.
Fantastic.
So at the Anarchy show this last weekend, Judas and Jeff Lewis are both there who also went with you to China. And so hear some of the crazy antics that happened while they were over there. Some of it kind of secondhand, but I'd love to hear one of your travel stories of getting out, because you said there was a lot of time to travel and get to see things. So I'd love to hear about that as well.
You know, I spent most of my time with my tag partner, Elliot, at Judas, and we would kind of walk the cities and just try to find the gems and things, but it got a little crazy. They had, we did the sponsored kind of thing where you have to do the after party at one of the local bars called the V Club, and it got quite insane. They had Judas and a couple of the guys, you know, getting on stage and cutting promos and going crazy, and the whole place started throwing beers at everybody, just like Stone Cold style. Just you throw your hand up, and then here comes a beer. You don't even know where it was coming from. Those nights got a little little wild. When you start throwing free beer at a bunch of big wrestlers, it gets a little out of hand, a little crazy, but. You know, we had a good time, but most of the time, I mean, truthfully, we tried to be, you know, on our best behavior at all times because we didn't know. You're in this crazy different environment, different world, where everything we did, you know, we had people with us kind of watching everything we did. We didn't know really what we could get away with and what we couldn't. It wasn't always a relaxed environment. I think the next time things will be a little more laid back in terms of just our mentality going into some of these places and knowing what we can do, what we can't do. And, you know, the last thing we wanted to do was offend anybody and, you know, have the press there on Larry on the website there for you being like a local wrestler imprisoned in China with his
sure
something like that. That's not something we were shooting for, but you know, we had a really good time and a really good crew. Juice, yeah, and Jeff Lewis, Neil, both you know, they're great guys too, and I think overall it was a solid effort and a good step in the right direction.
awesome.
So were you under observation when you were there? Like, were you free to roam?
We had some people with us, translator wise, and then some of the government people were connected with the shows. But in terms of like in downtime, what we could do, we were free to roam. We were free to do everything. We actually, you know, we'd walk the streets and go check out the gyms and go. We finally found a McDonald's, which was I hate McDonald's personally. But it tasted like heaven when we finally found it, because a lot of the food over there, it's not that it's, I guess, bad food, because they seem to love it. It just didn't work well with what we're normally used to in terms of finding, like, protein that we could intake. And sometimes you put meat on a plate, and then you just stare at it and go, I don't really quite know what this is. so that a little bit of a headache. There was one night I got a plate at the hotel, and I thought it was chicken, and I said, chicken? The cook shook his head, and he cooked it for me, put it back on my plate. This woman came up with these, you know, her eyes got really big, and she pointed at my plate. She said, no chicken, no chicken. So I don't know what we ate.
The only thing you know is it's not chicken. Boy, talk about a horror movie.
And, you know, it's wrestling. It's always an adventure, so you take a chance. And but I think we averaged like across the board of all the roster that we took over there with us, just like a 12-pound average of weight loss, just because. It was kind of rough. They had signs up everywhere like, do not drink the water unless it's bottled. Our appetites were a little thin some days, but it is what it is. We made the most of it.
Wow. If we could change gears for just a little bit, you've wrestled all over the place, Tennessee and Rampage in Georgia and all over.
Yeah.
Is there, this is something that we talk about quite a bit, so I'd be really interested in getting your take on this. Is there a difference from state to state how they approach pro wrestling in your experience? Is there like a definitive sort of like Tennessee archetype of wrestling like there was in the territory days, or a Georgia way of doing things as far as in-ring or promotional style or the personalities that you deal with, or is that mostly bunk?
To me, there's different aspects of it. Promotional style, it's not necessarily state to state. It's whether you have a good promoter or a bad promoter in terms of knowing what they're doing. You know, wrestling style, people can say, you know, it's either Southern style or strong style, whatever. It either works and you can work, or you can't. You're either over or you're not. No matter where I go, especially, you know, with my partner, we kind of keep the same kind of aspect going everywhere we go. I mean, Texas, China, Vegas, California, Florida, wherever. We just work and, you know, we try to connect with the crowd and entertain them the best way that we've developed to know how. And so guys can either work or they can't. You know, they either are able to connect with the people, or they go out there and don't know what they're doing. You know, and there's different ways, you know, people work, and there's different aspects. Some guys, you know, like the high flying thing or whatever, and you implement that in different ways, and it gets over the same as long as you know what you're doing. I mean, it just, and everybody's going to tell you a different answer. I mean, I'll tell you that, you know, you either work or you can't, and then some guys will be like, well, I'm a strong style guy, and that's what gets over. I'm a Southern guy, or, you know, I like the lucha or what, you know, whatever, but I know what works for me, and I try to be able to work with anybody I get in the ring with. I like to be able to go out there, no matter who I'm working with or where they're from or how they were trained, and I try to put out the best match possible and make sure the people feel like that they got their money's worth and that they're willing to come back next month, whether, you know, I got to get you know, that heat on them at the end to lure them back to make them want to buy that ticket or whatever we got to do. As long as the people are happy and they're wanting more of it, I really don't care what style people want to put out. You know, as long as we're doing our job at making money and making people want the product for whatever company it may be, whether it's NWA or, you know, Ring of Honor, all those guys are wanting to do the same thing too. They're wanting to improve the business and make money. And hopefully, you know, everybody's learning, everybody's trying to adapt in the economy because the economy's tough. People don't have as much money to go buy tickets and spend money on gimmicks that they used to. But all these companies, you know, they're working hard, whether it be TNA, Ring of Honor, Jeff Jarrett's Global Force, WWE, everybody's trying to put out the best product that they can. The guys are all working really hard with the same goal of putting asses in seats and, you know, bringing them back each time. So, you know, sorry, went on a rant, but I just look at it like that.
You know, you Georgia fans aren't too familiar with your partner, Elliot Russell. Could you tell us a little bit about Heat Seekers and Elliot Russell?
Yeah, we've been tagging, I guess, about 2 years now. As far as Georgia goes, we haven't done a whole lot. Ricky Nelson runs his Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling down there. So we've done a little bit on those shows. Robert Gibson's company that he's working with at All Pro Championship Wrestling. Out there close to Atlanta. We did it a couple weeks ago. But yeah, Elliot's a great guy. He was trained by Dr. Tom Pritchard, myself. We've been traveling about 2 years together, mainly focused on NWA stuff right now. You know, trying to bring a little bit what we can do, awareness back to NWA and the companies associated with it, like Smoky Mountain, Mid-South, and Elite, and Texas, and just wherever we can go, Vendetta in California. So he's a hardworking guy, and he's improving dramatically, tall, and he's becoming a powerhouse. So that's the way we're approaching matches. He's the powerhouse, I'm the technical guy, and that's how we're kind of getting things done. Great partner, great road partner, and somebody I've always tried to be in a tag team. I like singles wrestling, but I've always liked tag team wrestling better, whether it's when I was tagging with David Young or now Elliot. And, you know, so that's kind of how we're approaching things these days. But we'll be back down there in Georgia, I think, on the 12th of September. And is it Cordell, Georgia? Is that right?
That's right.
Cordell.
Yeah. Cordell, yeah.
Cordell.
That's okay, I say it wrong, too.
We're down there at Cordell on September 12th.
You're based in East Tennessee. What's your thoughts on the East Tennessee scene currently?
Well, I was based in East Tennessee.
Oh.
Back in December, my wife got a job with Disney, and so we moved down here to Orlando. So I'm a Florida guy. But I'm never home, which my wife just loves. so much. But I'm a Florida guy now, but I still do a ton of work in Tennessee, especially with Smoky Mountain things. So didn't mean to interrupt your question.
No, that was it. I was wondering about your thoughts about the East Tennessee scene.
You know, from where I go, in Tennessee, things have been pretty solid. Tony Givens runs a great company. Most of my Tennessee work is with him, with Smoky Mountain. But I mean, he's drawing great houses. He's putting a lot of money into advertising and going door to door and doing everything he's got to do. We're having great fun up there, good matches, and you know, overall the Tennessee scene's doing good. I know NWA saw. Is running occasionally, and they're doing good houses. I think near Chattanooga, there's a couple groups down there, and they're trying to do what they can do. It's not as oversaturated as it was a couple years ago. A couple years ago, you just had guys trying to run all over the place with no clue what they were doing, and they were killing a lot of towns. Knoxville's still pretty much dead from all the crap that's gone through there. But, you know, it's on the mend. That's what I would say. That's the wrestling scene in Tennessee. It's on the mend. and hopefully it can get repaired. Georgia's probably the same way. It tends to be like that just about everywhere, where anybody that's can get on high spots or wherever and get by a wrestling ring, set up with their buddies and just kill the business. That tends to be what's happening all over. Thankfully, there's a few people out there who's trying to eliminate the crap and actually make people appreciate wrestling and want to come out to the towns. You know, every so often you find a good promoter.
Yeah. I have one final question for me, and that's, you know, something that was remarkable when I was kind of looking into your career and the things that you had done. You, for a guy who wrestles in so many different places, you managed to sort of stay out of a lot of the bullshit. And I was wondering, is that something that just comes naturally to you to sort of avoid? I mean, Tennessee is a very volatile thing. I mean, as soon as you say NWA Smoky Mountain, you know, Chris Lash pops into my mind, and I start thinking about all the crazy stuff. I mean, whenever we have one of these guys on, all the stuff that it leads to. You managed to sort of avoid all of that. Is that something you were trained to do? Is that something that you changed about yourself? You're dealing with wrestling BS, basically.
Yeah, for a while there, when I first broke in, I thought I was on top of the world. I got a big head on my shoulders because I had a lot. At the time, I thought I was doing great. I'd been trained by Tom Pritchard and did camps with Harley Race and stuff. So I thought I was a lot better than I really was at the time. And so, you know, I'd get the heat-seeking thing. it became a reality for a while. But then you realize, I mean, if you want to do anything in this wrestling business, you got to try to not blow up bridges and try to stay out of that bull crap, man. And so now I try to play it as smooth as possible and then try to be cool with everybody. There's a lot of drama that's just unnecessary, unneeded. A lot of the drama that you see in locker rooms tends to go out into the general public, and then it ends up hurting the business. It hurts the company that those people, whoever they are associated with. And a lot of people do stupid shit, and then it's bad, and it just hurts what we're trying to do and what we're trying to make a living at. And you know, that's something that I think everybody associated with wrestling needs to really step back. And half of the drama that happens, man, it's over something really dumb. I know a lot of guys that, and a lot of good workers too, that have heat with each other over absolutely the dumbest crap you can think imaginable. And
yes,
it ends up hurting the locker rooms. It ends up hurting, you know, the show. And then you have all these great talents that don't want to work with each other or don't want to do business just cause, you know, and a lot of time it goes back to some girl involved or just something stupid. and so, you know, I'm trying to avoid that, stay out of that, as much as humanly possible. I got a few friends that get involved in that crap, and then I end up having to sometimes stick my head in it just to try to calm down a situation. you get heat by association getting involved in the junk. So, yeah, I try to avoid it. It's not always been that way. I think a little older, a little wiser now. Sometimes I wake up, I'll be in a locker room and I'll be sitting there sometimes. And I feel like the old guy. I'm 28 years old, but sometimes I feel like I'm the damn 65-year-old veteran just sitting there, the grizzled guy who's like, this is just so stupid. You know, just.
you know, I think you're one of these guys who wrestlers who are coming up should learn from that, unfortunately, often don't. I think another guy like I think about like UHA Nation and what he's doing now, or a guy like Austin, aka Xavier Woods. These are guys that let their ring work sort of speak for them and weren't overly vocal about anything. Not that they didn't have opinions, not that they didn't have definitive points of view, but they were always sort of eyes on the prize guys and professionals,
and back
you know?
I'm not to interrupt, but back on your point, social media is the real killer. A lot of people, they do those, they get hot about something and then they throw it on social media instantly. And then, you know, a couple of days later think, oh man, maybe I shouldn't have posted that. So when it comes to things like that, that ends up starting a lot of drama and problems and putting a lot of heat on different situations that don't need to be. So most of my social media, I'm a social media whore, but most of it is posting stuff to promote shows, or I'll put up a douchebag gym picture each day. Nothing. I try not to get vocalized too heavy about the politics of wrestling or the real world, or get involved in some of these hot button issues, because that ends up fans see that and then they get involved in it. Then you start interacting in ways that you shouldn't if you're wanting to draw these people to shows. So I try to keep, like you said, eyes on the prize, and keep things just focused on wrestling and things that people aren't going to get too offended about, where they're like, well, you know, we're not coming to that show anymore. I encourage everybody not just in wrestling, but before you press that tweet button or that post button on Facebook, sit and read it. Think how it's going to go over for the next couple of days. Because that stuff, and you know, big companies, WWE, Ring of Honor, all those guys, if they're looking at somebody, they're monitoring their social media. And guys,
absolutely
realize that. And so, you know, they've got, especially WWE, they've got guys whose job it's to check these guys out and see what all they posted about for the past little bit, whether they're posting some crazy stuff. And, you know, that can either, you know, that's a hire or fire moment, you know, for a lot of guys. And I've been guilty of posting stupid shit, you know, years ago. But I've tried to definitely calm that down, and I encourage everybody just to be smart about what you post and what you react to and how you react. Think about things. But, you know, it is what it is, and not many people are going to listen to me or anybody else for that matter.
Matt, is there anything that you'd like to promote, shows you have coming up before we send you off here? What do you got coming up?
You know, any NWA Smoky Mountain shows I'm a part of, going to be doing a lot this fall through various NWA companies. Check them out, NWA Mid-South, NWA Elite, you know, NWA Vendetta, NWA Appalachia. So a lot of those NWA companies got a lot of work for them coming up. Any of the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling stuff, we're doing a lot of towns in Georgia, you know, around once a month or so. Got the China tour supposed to happen up in November again. You know, fingers crossed on that one, as long as it goes well. I post all, and AML Wrestling, that's another great company that I work for down in the Carolinas, that's doing really good business. I got two shows for them this weekend, one in High Point, North Carolina, Saturday night, and then Sunday afternoon in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Johnny and June's Bar, they tape TV out of there and do a really good job with production and putting out a good, it's a 30-minute weekly product where they do like a one match a week, kind of make it a big deal. So those are coming up this weekend. Big on Twitter and Instagram, both of them are Sigmund Wrestling, one word. And so, yeah, just at Sigmund Wrestling on those. And, you know, you can check those out for any shows that's upcoming, or radio appearances and whatnot. So I appreciate the time, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for coming on. A phenomenal guest. And I think all the success that you're having, I think anybody, even if people weren't familiar with you before, it's clear it's very much deserved. And they would do themselves a favor to come check you out, whether it's in Vegas, Tennessee, or China. Thanks again for being on.
Thank you.
Larry, he was a phenomenal guest. When did you first see him wrestle?
That would have been for Saw. When he was going up to Nashville, and then he did have a run with in Rampage, where he was teaming with Sean Schultz.
Hmm. Wow, that was like in the earlier days of Rampage.
The early days when they were really doing well. They came down from Tennessee for those shows. But, you know, a nicer guy in wrestling, I've met very few. He's just a really nice guy.
Nicely done. And he's right near my neck of the woods. And if he's good at avoiding drama, that will serve him well in the Florida area. Holy moly. There's some drama. A couple of notable things to talk about is Leva Bates, who, we've used more than a couple of times at Platinum Championship Wrestling. Her showing up at the NXT show and putting her with the Vaudevillians was one of those moments that just, it made me feel really good about wrestling. I think the Anarchy's final show going that well, seeing Leva Bates, who I know how hard she works, and to see her parlay, and I mean, she's a former Tipping Point guest, so that should be noticed to all future potential guests of Tipping Point that we have the golden touch, that she's managed to make basically a wardrobe snafu and just being earnest work and make a thing work. It's been really great to see even the New Day, which if somebody had told me 6 months ago that New Day thing would one, still be around, two, that they would be multiple time tag champions, and three, be often one of the most entertaining things on pay-per-views and shows that they're on, I would have never believed it, but those guys have managed to make that work. I'm very hopeful about wrestling's future, though. Rachel, I want to get your take on this. You know, at 4 years ago, it's safe to say that the four or five big leagues were Rampage, Anarchy, PCW, Peach State, and now the landscape has changed so much. You've worked for just about all of those companies. Now it's WrestleMerica, who you've worked for. PCW is still around, certainly. Crowd-wise, not the biggest, but influence-wise, very big. Peach State's still around and kicking, but now Anarchy's gone. Rampage is gone. What's your initial thought about that? I mean, can you believe that you worked for basically two companies that were within a 2 or 3 years of you starting there are gone when they were once top of the mountain? Does that shock you at all?
You know, it doesn't. I know not all of the companies have closed, but the landscape does change. It's, I think, just kind of the nature of the beast that, especially when you just have one person coming up with the ideas, you're going to have ebb and flow on who's on top. And it's just kind of, I think, a very natural thing. For the ones that have closed down, it's unfortunate to see places that were doing so well. And I know Anarchy's not, like, closed, but it's definitely made a lot of big changes. I feel very fortunate to have worked for both of them, both Rampage and Anarchy, because I learned quite a bit at both of them in different ways. But no, I think that, in 5 years it's going to change again. It's, different people are going to book different shows and new owners are going to take over at places. The empires of the world are going to pop up and the anarchies of the world are going to close down. It's just something that you have to look forward to, not necessarily look forward to in a good way, but it does just change like that, and you have to roll with the punches. You can't get hung up on, look at all the people that came out of there, and now this person's gone, and so it's not worth it. You take what you were given from those places. You have to feel fortunate to work for them, and then apply it at the places you go to going forward, which is something that I'm definitely going to do. But it's all about building toward the future and understanding that, it is a changing landscape. And that is the one consistent, is that it will continue to change.
Yeah. Larry, I want to have an old man moment with you, if that's all right.
It's fine.
Rachel won't be able to relate to this 100%, but I think you and I will. So you and I grew up in an era where television was pivotal in wrestling, right? Pivotal. That's what you built your thing around. Wrestling territories went to war over television stations, because without television, you were pretty much dead in the water. It was your infomercial. It was your way to get people to come out to the live shows and present your product. Rampage is gone. And even if they revive it, like they talk about doing all the time, it's not the same. They're not going to have television. They're not going to have Doc Gayton behind them. It's Rampage in name only, realistically, right? Whatever this new incarnation of wrestling is at the Church of Southern Wrestling, I highly doubt television's going to be a part of it. Or even if it is, it will be so cursory at best that it really serves no vital purpose, as television usually does in wrestling. Is this the end of an era, which is wrestling at, on the independent level in the state of Georgia on television? Is it the end?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as it meaning anything, that era ended already. But, yeah, I mean, that's been over. I don't think TV matters for independents hardly in any situations for smaller independents, because you don't have enough reach, enough penetration for it to make any difference, even if the show's good. But certainly in Georgia, yeah, that's over. Those days of I was just, you know, I put up a post about Dave Brown retiring, who was the longtime Memphis sidekick to Lance Russell, and I just pulled a clip which was Eric Ambry primarily.
Ah!
Also, yes, and it's up on the gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com. But I was just sitting and looking and thinking, oh my, this is the kind of promo that got people to come out to shows to see what was going to happen, and to be able to talk like that is what got people to come to shows, and that's just not, you know, that just doesn't happen on the independent level much.
Yeah, I'm sorry, please, Rachel, yes.
I kind of want to add to that just from what I've seen, because Anarchy and Rampage both had TV. PCW for a short time had TV. NWA Atlanta when they were MGCW. I think as long as TV on the independent level is something that you have to pay for,
yeah,
it's never going to be the quality that's actually going to help the show. You know, WWE works because they've got the contract with larger stations. They've got people helping behind. Turner obviously helped a lot
with WCW,
WCW. So as long as wrestling has to pay for itself, they're never going to have the funds to be really reaching out like they need to. There's just not the resources there.
I think that's very astute. I mean, when you look at the TNA situation, where Destination America would rather run a second run Ring of Honor show that they don't have to pay for, that I think the real issue that Destination America may or may not have with TNA is the fact that they have to pay for that show when Ring of Honor will just let them have theirs for free. I mean, but how are you ever going to build a brand and a television show that matters if you're just running second rate stuff? I'm curious, once September rolls around, is TNA still going to be there? Clearly all this crossover stuff they're doing with Global Force seems like a desperate last grab to remain relevant enough to hopefully have a television thing. But, you know, WWE has gotten to the point where there is no viable second place, not Ring of Honor, not TNA, not Global Force, nobody. Nobody's in their neighborhood.
The Underground's another one that's dropped off because there's rumors that there won't be another season of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because again, it was, and it was a great show, a very well-regarded show that took money to run. To get that level of quality, you can't have it both ways in the modern environment. Wrestling made its way in because it was cheap to produce programming that got a rating. Now, cheap to produce doesn't exist. Even reality shows, quote unquote, have huge production budgets. And, you know, Lucha Underground spent, I mean, I forgot the figure that I read about how much an episode. It was jaw-dropping that wrestling costs that much to do, but it does cost that much to do when you want it to look good and be good. And it just might not be worth it anymore. It's very, very interesting to see where wrestling's going to go. Certainly in Georgia, in some ways, it's phenomenal. There's a ton of shows to see. A lot of great talent, a lot of guys moving on to the next level. But at the same time, you wonder what's going to come from wrestling in the state of Georgia. especially because Larry said television is no longer a factor. It's about utilizing online. I mean, I was going to say to push this thing forward with anarchy. I put out promo after promo after promo. Its effectiveness, who knows? I don't think that it sold a lot of tickets, but I do think that it made for a very emotional last show. I think it's one of those where I don't know how many people I talked into the door, but I do know that the people that showed up hated my fucking guts. And that I can definitely testify to. And maybe that's what it's going to become, is people just sort of marketing to the people that are already inclined to come to the shows to create bigger reactions. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think that's spot on. I mean, I think it did. It impacts the people that do come. It doesn't get extra people to come.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. Larry, where are you going to be this weekend?
I will be at Ring of Honor on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I'm going to do much of a report, but I want to see the show. Sunday, I will be at AWE.
Oh, boy. Their last big show before. They have a show in September as part of that package that they initially sold, where it's going to be Murder One Against Sabu in September. But man, with all the stuff Sabu's getting into, you know what? That makes that match with Murder One more interesting to me. All the stuff that's come out about Sabu. Can't wait to see that one. Miss Rachel, you're wrestling someplace brand new on the 29th, aren't you?
I am, but before that, I will be back in Blue Ridge at Deep Southern. And then I will be at AML on Saturday in High Point, North Carolina.
Woof, Miss Rachel, making the rounds, getting to different places. Definitely want to come check that out. And, of course, we're rolling forward to Sacred Ground for PCW September 26th. We're going to do an hour show in Porterdale and then throw them on buses and return to what's now called Tudor Square, but the former site of the Academy Theater. PCW's coming home, and all those regular Friday night fans are going to want to turn out on Saturday, September 26th. It's going to be absolutely insane. I've been on the phone. I've been cluing Larry in a little bit on some of the people who were regulars on those Friday shows who are going to come back and do that Sacred Ground. It ought to be a very special, one of those special kind of shows. It seems like every third Sacred Ground is something a little bit special, even over the other ones. And Sacred Ground Chapter 6 is proving to be proving that is the truth. And it ought to be pretty great. So, Larry, what do we have going on? I'm sorry, please.
One last thing. I don't think I'm going to be able to bring myself to call it Tudor Square.
No. I mean, you saw how much I struggled with even remembering the name. Hell no, that's the former site of the Academy Theater. I mean, which should be embarrassing, right? But we made that into something pretty special. That little backspace at Academy Theater was where a lot of ridiculous, sexy magic happened. And I imagine all that's going to be there on September 26th. Larry, what do we got up on Tipping Point for next week before we sign off?
Next week, we've got a double bill. We've got Tommy Too Much and hopefully Simon Sermon talking about whatever the heck happened with LaGrange Championship Wrestling, and they're discontinuing there. So that should be interesting. We're also going to have, I'm really glad we're doing this, we're having Jeff Richards to talk Carolina Wrestling. And boy, does he know Carolina Wrestling. So that's our
absolutely. So next week, got to hear us about LaGrange's hate of the rainbow flag, and we're going to have Jeff Richards on the Tipping Point. It's going to be a great weekend of wrestling. Go out and see a show. For Miss Rachel, Larry Goodman, and myself, we say rest in peace, please, Anarchy Wrestling, and we'll see you next week on the Tipping Point.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network.
Yeah.
Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
Larry, good take on the guest. I think Matt was phenomenal. Really good guy. Holy moly.
I'm working with him 2 or 3 times in the next month, too.
Nicely done. Shit. See if we'll do PCW. I'll call it NWA PCW, whatever.
Whatever it takes.
And